I think the song I want to use today is that Eminem song where he said, "Why am I wired so differently? Am I a Martian?" What the hell's that called? It's one of his best. Man, I vibe so hard to that song. Anyways, it's about that time period in my life. I'm realizing how different I am from all the people around me, and I find something that gives me some passion. But I go through some stuff. Hop in. Let's take a ride. Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire, and y'all are presumably still y'all. And always with the hope that we have some new ears and new eyes. I've said this before, but if you're new to the show, you're way better off if you just go back to the first episode and start from there. You don't have to, but you're not going to understand a lot of what we're talking about because a lot of this stuff ties together. So I'm just trying to help you out. Of course, all are welcome in the Church of Internal Combustion, even you EV cats. It ain't my bag, but I could always appreciate interest in technology and those who tinker with it. Woo! Today, we're going to visit a really rowdy time in my past. And there's a lot of bad decisions in this time period, but also some really, really epic good ones, you know. But I did some bad stuff during this time, and I'm doing my best to be honest about that. And I hurt some people. And while I'm not proud of it, nor do I wish to promote it, I feel like being honest about it is a very powerful thing because you can't overcome anything until you're honest about it. That may turn out to be something stupid I said that I don't agree with later. Before we get off on that, let's take a minute to talk about our sponsor and read some comments from last week's episode. The Wrecking Yard, of course, is brought to you today by the Everyone Racers podcast. Everyone's Racers is a podcast about amateur endurance racing from beginner to advanced, as well as the news, tips, and tricks that go along with our hobby. Four friends and often teammates, Chrissy Matura, Christopher Abbott, Tim Burr, and Christian Mental Ward, discuss current racing trends and news, as well as occasional interviews and guests who are interesting people with different perspectives on racing and car culture. And like I said, I told you, I've listened to some and I've listened to some more since then. And if you got any interest in that side of racing, you should definitely go check them out. These guys are out there doing it and, guys and gals are out there doing it. And, it's cool, man. I really like hearing I love hearing the stories about what goes on behind the scenes of that style of racing. Cause it's not something I'm familiar with, but, like I said, all the repair stories stuff are really cool. So go check it out. Everyone's Racers podcast. All right, let's do some comments. Yep. All right, you're going to bear with me. My technology is fighting me today. That's okay. We're going to get through it because, gosh darn it, I just believe we can. All right, who's my first comment here? Eric Planty, 2104. I hate to be that guy, but I think it's Jeff Buckley that covered Hallelujah. Man. You are 100% right. And all you in the chat sat there last week and let me call that man Jeff Buck like 19 times and not one of you corrected me. Y'all be ashamed of yourself. Y'all should have known I had that wrong. Eric, you ain't that guy. I appreciate you showing up for me, man. I definitely had the wrong name there, and certainly no disrespect to Mr. Buckley or Mr. Beck. Both fine men, both fan of both. But yes, Jeff Beck. No, Jeff Buckley. So, boy, I was about to screw it up again. Look at that. See? I don't do good with those kind of names. Right around in my brain. These things still got a lot of rust on. Let's see. Second comment from @sir_glass. Thank you for understanding that military and veteran suicide is a problem. A lot of people don't think it's that bad, but it is. People like you making others laugh is a great way to help. Hey, man, you know, as always, something I take very seriously, something we all should. Not only do we need to stop it, but we need to find out what's causing it and stop that too, you know? And, you know, that's not a discussion for this podcast, but certainly a discussion that needs to be had. And, man, if you are out there and you're struggling, the veteran crisis, what is it? veterancrisisline.net, you know, they have people trained to deal with veterans, trained to talk to you guys that understand the problems and the stuff you're going through, or at least have a better understanding than maybe a civilian would. And don't clock out early, bro. Talk to somebody, you know, before you make that call. Talk to somebody. Nobody won't see you clock out early. I promise you there is somebody here that loves you and needs you on this planet. It may even be me. The last paramedic saved my life was a veteran. So, you know, somebody here needs you to stay on this planet. And you clock out early, you're going to miss out on all that. So get help where you can get help. But veterancrisisline.net, they have trained staff. If you just need somebody to talk to, and they offer a lot of veteran support services. So definitely reach out to those guys. It's rough stuff. All right, what's our next comment? A lot of correction comments today. At Neil Lambie 7525, Jerry John Goodman's character was Walter Sobchak. I don't know what that means. I feel like you're speaking to me in code, and I don't. Oh, no, because I was saying I look like him from the, what is that dumb movie? I know y'all probably love it, actually. Lebowski? It's a Lebowski. Yeah, I get it. I got you now. That's Walter Sobchak, the John Goodman character in Big Lebowski, Walter Sobchak. I have something I should probably be honest about. I can't stand that movie. And it's the wildest thing because I love the Coen brothers. I love John Goodman as one of my favorite actors in the entire world. Jeff Bridges, beloved. Sam Elliott, one of my favorites. Love, weird dude. Guy with a weird name. Oh, he's from Con Air. Steve Buscemi. Love Buscemi. There's literally, like I should love everything about that movie. I have tried to watch it like 8 times, and 8 times I have not made it through that movie awake. Cannot. It just doesn't do it for me. I do not. It's one of those I will never understand the appeal of. I know some of you scratch your head right now like, oh, I thought I liked this guy. Yeah, I don't like Pink Floyd either. Yeah, that's a whole nother story for another day. Not into the Big Lebowski, but thanks for coming and let me know his name. I do appreciate that. All right, we've done our propers. So now we're going to go back 2003 again, right? Is it 2003? It's about that, somewhere in there. These timelines are messy. I'm not the multiverse. I'm not Marvel. If I get some shit wrong, We'll figure it out when we print the book. As always, like I said, so just listen to the first episode. Biggest problem is I'm 47. I forget shit. That's why things get tied up. But if you listen to the Datsun 280Z episode, then you kind of know where we're at. I told you right at the end of that episode, I sold that car over that girl. And not over that girl, but I sold that car. And, damn, this seat is noisy today. All right. But I sold that car. And I had just bought this truck. And I'm making money now, right? I'm shooting NDT welds all day. I'm back in the business. My career stock is rising. My personal life, not so much. I'm after that girl lied to me all that stuff, and I'd gone through everything with Tori, I'm a little bit of a mess. I sold my Datsun. And this girl lied to me about more stuff than I didn't know where to begin. I tell you where I'm at. I'm pissed at women. I think maybe none of them are no good, which is way easier than evaluating my own choices and behavior. Right before I sold that Datsun, though, I bought the newest vehicle I'd ever owned. I went to it was a tote-to-note lot because I was a dummy, and I went to a tote-to-note lot, and I bought me a 1993 F-150 XLT, and I mean XLT, baby. Fully loaded, had a 5-disc changer in it. It's a 302 truck, automatic, power windows. I mean, had it. Hey, whatever you wanted, I had it, you know. Truck was fine, boy. It was black with the gray on the inside, so the two-tone. So the black and the charcoal gray kind of stripe running down the side of the truck. Woo! Boy, it's one of the finest looking pickups I've ever seen. Every once in a while now, I still see an Aeronose that I'm just like, man, I forgot what good looking trucks them are. I mean, that's where Aeronose, I think, I like Aeronose better than Bricknose. It looks better than me. I like Bullnose better than both them, but that Aeronose, that's a clean looking pickup. And Aeronose pickups, what my papa had, you know, right before. My papa was a Ford man, and he always liked them Aeronose trucks. And he had a Bricknose, but boy, he had a good looking little Aeronose pickup in his later years. So I was proud of that thing, Bubby. I tell you what, and I will also tell you this, I was paying way too much for it. Because I don't know if you know how tote the note lots worked back then or if they still work that way. But back then, these guys go to dealer auction, they buy these vehicles, put $100 in them, you know, some new belts or whatever, set them on the lot, and then they'd ask down, the down payment on that vehicle would be whatever they paid for it at that dealer auction. And then they'd just rake you over the coals, some high interest payments and yada, 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 and come repo it if you didn't pay it or whatever. And, you know, your fault for getting in that deal. You know, we're supposed to pay attention to what we sign, what we get involved with. But it's predatory behavior. But it's also, you know, what's that? Isn't there some kind of Caesarship where he says something about buy at your own risk or something, caveat? Nah, it ain't important. Fire beware, something like that. Anyway, yeah, you got to take it on yourself, take responsibility. I was young and dumb. I didn't really care. He told me what the payments were. I knew I was making enough money to pay that. I had enough money to put down on it. I had shit credit. But I drove off a lot with that bad boy that day, man, me and her. We were together after that, off that lot. Woo! I mean, power seat, power windows, air conditioning. I am downtown Diamond Gym now, baby. Woo! I felt good about that truck. Oh, I had to have her the minute I saw her. I've been looking at trucks for 3 days when I seen her. And that, she was the one. But my job was getting a little more. I needed a truck because I was having to haul some equipment back and forth to some different job sites and meet other techs and stuff. So I was kind of at that stage in my life where I was needing a truck again. Damn, I love Aeronose Ford, though. Woo, I sure do. Even if this one drove me drinking. Just kidding, I was already drinking. Oh, that damn tinfoil, amazing. Oh, crap, you knew that. Let me get on down here. Sometimes you buy something. You ever just buy something to make yourself feel better, you know, like new shoes, new hat. That's exactly what this truck was. I felt awful inside, but this truck was making me feel better. It was the nicest vehicle I'd ever owned at that point. I mean, I tell you, we ain't paint job people. I had old beaters and old young. And I remember the first time my mom saw this truck, when I pulled up in the driveway, and she was like, oh, Jaybird, it's so pretty. I didn't know you was getting a pretty truck. I didn't think it's going to be pretty, because she is used to me and all my junk, you know. And she didn't like old junk. She grew up in a junkyard, and unlike me, she had an adverse reaction to it. She didn't ever want to be around that mess again. I fell in love with it. Think of it often. She sure was psyched about that truck. Boy, that's a good-looking truck, Jerry Wayne. And about that time, my brother was looking to move out of where he was living. And we decided to roommate up together, which we had never done at that point. I don't think. Have we? No. Anyways, we decided to roommate up together. My brother Joey we are almost complete opposites in personality and stuff we're into. Like, it's kind of wild that we are as close as we are. We're very, very different people. But if I got rich tomorrow and started doing for Joey tomorrow, I could do the rest of my life and never repay all the things he's done for me, repay all the times he's been there for me. He's not, even though we're not blood related, he is 100% my brother. He is the brother I have on this planet. And I kill somebody about him. You understand? Like, he's that, he's one of the people that is most important. It goes, my wife, kids, and Joey. That's how it goes. That's how much he means to me. So just to set the stage for that. But younger me and younger Joey, we had several fights and several disagreements, and oh boy, went at each other's throats a number of times, and big epic battles, and I mean, not a lot, you know. Most of the time we were thick as thieves. I remember even every once in a while I still see people from like the old days, and they're like, man, you and Joey still hang out together. That's wild. I was always like, boy, y'all were always thick as thieves back then. But yeah, man, that's my guy. My best friend in the world outside of Rachel. And he means a great deal to me, more than I could probably, I probably don't have good enough words to express what Joey means to me. Being his roommate, suck balls though. I'm just kidding. No, Joey's great. Joey's a clean freak. I'm not. I'm a slob. I literally just live for months at a time with all my clothes scattered out on the floor of my apartment. I don't have that, whatever it is that makes y'all tick, and you got to clean everything up, put everything right back in its right place, or the whole world will stop working. I don't have that. Joey do. And so right off the bat, there was always friction, but we had this little... I think it was called Easton Commons Village, and it's a little road right over off 290 called Jackrabbit Road. And Joey worked right there. There's a big company called Daniel Valve or M&J Valve that my dad worked at. My dad got Joey a job in calibration there. So Joey worked there, and he ran the calibration shop at this time. And I'm making money hand over fist. I'm still, I'm working for Testmasters at the time, and having a good time doing it. And I'll tell you this, out of all the, we'll talk more about them in a minute, but I'm working at Testmasters at the time. I'm enjoying my job. Testmasters was a great company to work for. My boss, Mark, was, man, I want to tell you about all them guys. And me, and so like, but also we're in our 20s. You know, me and Joey are in our 20s. We spend just about every night shooting pool tournaments and drinking until it was time to hit a Denny's or a Whataburger. There's up and down Highway 6 there, there's about 20 little bars, and all of them had pool tournaments on different nights. And you could run up and down Highway 6 and play pool tournaments every night of the week if you wanted to, or dart tournament. But usually we're pool. We like shooting pool, and we're pretty decent at it. So usually one of us would come home with some money on it or take us all the Whataburger about some pool league money, you know. Joey's real crack shot. I'm pretty good, you know. I can knock him balls off the table when I need to. But I was young, bro. I'm young, man. You know how it is to be young, man. That's back when I drank that rock gut and well bourbon all night long. 3 or 4 in the morning. Get up the next morning, 5 or 6 a.m., couple Doral lights, pack of no-dos, and Dr. Pepper would get me to the end of the day. And then I'd have some beers with the crew at the shop, and then I'd go find Joey, and we'd start all over again. Usually, I'd just meet him at the bar. Sometimes I'd meet him back at the house, but we lived right in the middle of all that. Happens, you don't put things up and take care of them. One of the things I missed the most about that time period, even though it wasn't a great time, was drinking Old Forester with my brother. Because Old Forester used to be cheap. And me and Joey would drink Old Forester all night long and sing Lionel Richie's Sail On, because we were both pretending to be mad at girls for being girls, I guess. He was going through some stuff with a gal. I was going, you know, through my stuff. And, you know, that's when you need you. That's when you need your brother, right? So you need somebody to step in, help you deal. That was old Joey. He was there for me. And I think about those nights off. Every once in a while, I get a little lit. I think about just being drunk with Joey and singing. Me and him, we were doing everything. We would go fishing all the time. Me and Joey were fishing all the time. We had nothing for us to get off work and be like, man, let's go to Galveston tonight. And we'd just head down to Galveston, go wade fishing, whatever the hell we were doing. We were shark fishing at the pier and shark fishing at the bar. Baby, we were trying to get what we could get. This is wild. We're throwing down, man. We're spending about everything we're making, but we're having a good time. I don't really have a bucket list. A lot of people have a bucket list, but I got two things in my life that I would really like to happen again, or really like to happen. But one of them hasn't happened yet, but I want to renew my vows with Rachel in front of my friends and family, and my brother, Bart Stewart, officiating maybe on a Galveston beach or somewhere. Something simple with a open bar and a lot of karaoke and a lot of fun where we all try to sing songs we shouldn't. I'm Doing Perfect to Me by Al Green, because that's one of my songs for my girl. The other thing I really, really need to happen again in my life is I need to go fishing with my brother. And I mean one of these fishing trips where we just fish all day in the Gulf of Mexico. We drink too much and sing Lionel Richie and Doobie Brothers songs until our wives take over our well-being and put us to bed and have their own party. It's a simple request. Yeah. Testmasters is a cool place. I'm having a good time where I work. You run across one of them jobs where everything fits in. And Mark, the guy who owned that place, was just about as good a human being as you ever wanted to work for. He sure put up a lot of dumb shit out of me and I can't think of the word. But he had a lot of patience. He put up with a lot of dumb stuff out of me and was very patient with me. And I learned a lot from talking to him, learning about the business. You know, the guy knew what he was doing. That's why he started the business. And that place was a hoot, man. We had a full cast of characters over at the Testmasters. One of the accounts we had that I worked the most on, I think, was a place called PK Industries. And I don't even remember what the hell PK Industries built. But it was these long sections of like 36-inch pipe, and you would just go out there all the day out in the pipe yard and just shoot these 36-inch welds, x-ray 36-inch welds all day. And I set up the shot, went out there, shot them. Royce was the tech. Royce is really cool, man. I can't remember Royce's last name, but Royce is this cool-ass, kind of a biker dude, but had the hot girlfriend. He had a Phantom dually that was just tricked out and beautiful bike. And Royce was a cool dude. He spoke Japanese. He had like grown up as a military brat or an Okinawa or something. So he spoke Japanese. So when the Japanese investors come out to the job site, Royce could talk to him, this big old kind of rednecky biker dude, which was really cool. And I like Royce. Royce was a good tech to work under. He taught me a lot of stuff about shooting and how to shoot big projects. And man, I kind of got PK down, and it was just, you just had to go out there and rock and roll, you know, and it was hot, you know, it's Houston. And, man, there's something I always remember about PK Industries, and you take from this story whatever you want to take from this story, but I'm just going to tell you this, is God owned that place, had a whole bunch of money, right? And in my opinion, I don't think he paid his welders very good, and he hired a lot of immigrants and took advantage of them too. I'm not a big fan of this guy. But and nobody really seemed to like him. But about once a month, he would come down out of his little ivory tower in his $3,000 suit and put on a baseball, a trucker cap that said PK Industries on it, a cheap trucker cap. He'd come out there and eat at the Roach Coach with us regular folk and hang out at the picnic table or a little place we all had to kind of rest there. Well, I remember the way them people would just be like, oh, he's one of us. He's salt of the earth. And I'm like, are y'all that damn dumb? Hey, all you did was put a hat on. This is wild. Never thought I'd see anything like that again. Still, I did. Anyways. Boy, the Roach Coach. That's back when you had an iron stomach. Hey, one of my first stand-up jokes was about a Roach Coach. Boy, I sure had some bad situations. I don't know how many times I had to do that crippled crab walk in from the pipe yard trying to make it to the bathroom after eating something off a Roach Coach. And, you know, whatever you eat off a Roach Coach is also mixing up with all the Jack Daniels that you just finally stopped pouring in your stomach at 3 a.m. You know, and the nicotine, everything else. There were some close calls. Some close calls. Days we almost didn't get it done. That was a cool, it was a cool gig for the most part. I had a great time working out there at PK Industries. I like shooting those welds. And I like to work on Royce. Royce was really cool. I worked with another dude a lot too named Dennis Dornbush. And Dennis Dornbush was really cool. When I first started comedy, he would come out every once in a while and watch me. And he was a former alcoholic. He had gotten in Alcoholics Anonymous, got himself cleaned up. And about half of everybody in the oil field, especially in NDT, are alcoholics. There's a lot of it. And Dennis had really been through some stuff with it. And they would always be like, hey, Dennis, have a beer with us. He's like, man, if I'm going to break my sobriety, I'm going to do it better people than y'all. He's kind of a crusty old dude. He was funny, though. I liked him. I think he's from up north, so he's from Oregon or something. But he's a good dude. I liked him. They say he used to come to comedy shows every once in a while. I don't know if he's still out there kicking. I lost touch with a lot of them people. Our level three was a dude named Mike who was always drunk. Like, they used to tell us, oh, that's just his coffee creamer. Like, bro, your coffee creamer smells just like Crown Royal. That's wild, you know. This dude was always lit, but he knew his shit. He was a good level three. I mean, there's a couple things. Look, in these kind of jobs, everybody's got advice, or a lot of people do. Maybe not everybody. There's some of you perfectly sober. Good for you. Great. But most of us had advice. And it's like that for mechanics, too. I always tell, you know, if your mechanic don't have some kind of advice, you're in a Walmart. Go find a mechanic. Ooh. Yeah. One of the guys that worked there a lot, that I worked with a lot, we called him Clutch. He stuttered. I'd be surprised if Clutch is still around. Clutch had some health issues from years of drinking, from alcoholism, had just ruined his liver. I think maybe he was dealing with hepatitis or something. But anyway, they called him Clutch because he stuttered, and that was a nickname started before I got there. That's what Clutch went by. Clutch one night, I drove Clutch home from somewhere. We got drinking. We'd sit there in the shop. After we got done, we'd put all the x-ray cameras up and everything, all the gamma sources. And somebody would run to the little corner store and get a 16-pack or whatever, and we'd just start having some beers and bullshitting. And then some nights we'd finish that pack, we'd all leave, go do our own thing. Some nights we'd step there at 9, 10 o'clock at night, having drinks, you know. And there was a little bar we liked to go to every once in a while, too. Frank's or something, had hot dogs and shit. Frankenstein's, maybe. And so we'd go over there to Frankenstein's and finish that. Sometimes Joey'd come meet us. Sometimes I'd just party with the guys, or then I'd run off and meet him. One night Clutch got all hammered. I said, man, I feel like I need to give Clutch a ride home because he's already got two D-Dub guys. I don't want him to get there, get somebody killed or himself or whatever. So I drive Clutch out to his house, and he's drunk. He's so drunk. And Clutch would get real, real drunk and get real, just start tearing himself down. I'm such a piece of shit. I'm the worst human. All I do is let everybody down. I'm a garbage person. You know, just he would really get down on himself. And, you know, you don't want to hear that shit when you're drinking, having a good time. And so Clutch was doing that shit in the car on the way back. And we stopped to lay him out. He goes, hit me. I said, what? He goes, it was more like, Jerry, hit me. I was like, I ain't going to hit you, Clutch. No, I need you to hit me. I'm a piece of shit. Hit me. I ain't going to hit you, Clutch. Just trying to give you a ride home so you don't get yourself killed or anybody else. You better hit me. If you don't hit me, I'm going to hit you back. I said, you can't hit me back because I ain't hit you. And he punched me in the face, and I knocked the piss out of Clutch after that. I mean, I rang his head bounced off the inside of that window and back up like that. And just as quick, I reached over and opened the door and shoved him out of my truck. Drove off. Hit the gas line on 302, drove off, left him sitting in his driveway. Next day, he didn't even remember. Yeah, they were good guys. It was a good time. There was this guy, I can't remember what his name was, but we called him the Colonel. Or at least I called him the Colonel. But he was old dude, and he was ex-military, and he was the MAG, he was the MT guy. And guys that run mag benches, the mag guys are just weird. No matter how long you've been in NDT, you know some weird mag guys. The mag guys are just, I don't know if that magnetic pull all day does something to their brain and messes them up that we don't know about, but mag guys are weird. And the Colonel was no exception. Colonel also had some kind of blood sugar problem. And, If he didn't eat what he was supposed to eat and eat when he was supposed to, like he got too busy working on a big project, boy, his mood would go south quick. And I'm talking south, bro. Like his dude already had the cops involved, stuff pulling guns on his neighbors. This old man didn't mess around. When things go south, they went south. You know, obviously he was a great mag guy and good at running that part of the shop. But I called him Colonel every time I saw him. In fact, I remember one day somebody's like, why you always call him Colonel? We'll put up with his crap. Don't let him make you call him that. I was like, oh, he ain't making me call him nothing. I call him Colonel because the day he flips out and snaps, I want him to look at me and think we're on the same side. And the Colonel starts shooting y'all, I'm going to run for the door. The guy that ran the shop, not the guy that owned it, but the guy that ran the shop was this dude named Charlie Kaminsky. And he is a whole ass character on his own. He's a yelling boss, you know? You have yelling bosses in the old... He was a yelling boss. I don't mind that. I had lots of yelling bosses. I know how to do it without getting my feelings hurt. Yelling bosses, most times they're trying to keep you alive. And they get frustrated. Most times they're guys that work their way up in a position. That's why they're like that. So you can learn a lot from them dudes. And I sure learned some stuff from Charlie Kaminsky. Learned I didn't want to run a shop. Look like being a babysitter for a bunch of morons. But Charlie Kaminsky was, he would just lay into you. He had no qualms about laying into you. Oh, God, this is funny. I'm sweating. This is funny. I crapped myself one day. I was driving that truck. I was on my way to work. I was on my way into the shop, and I was late every day. I was that guy. I was late every day, but, you know, you can be late if you work hard. So, or at least you could back then. You know, everything's different now, but I was always just a little bit late. Not bad, 5-10 minutes, just, you know, I wasn't going to rush to work. I was going to stop and get my cigarettes. I was going to take my time. On the way to work one morning, we'd been up drinking and, of course, carousing and partying all night, you know, me and Joey doing our thing. And I was driving in. I wasn't feeling good. And I hit a bump right before I pulled into the parking lot. And when I hit that bump, I coughed. And I'm not going to be graphic. But after I coughed, I filled them britches up. I mean, all the way to the seat. It was bad, bro. I mean, just crap myself. Cough, crap myself. I was so mortified. I didn't know what to do. I pulled into the company parking lot and was like, nope, I got to turn around and go back the other way. I'm not staying in here, right? I can't work with poopy pants. I can't even get out of the truck right now. And I immediately went to pull back out of the parking lot to leave. And Charlie Kaminsky, I see him. He's coming from the other side of the shop. He's real tall, had this big crazy walk. Longmire, what are you doing? It's the first time you ever been on time. Now you're going to drive out of the parking lot so you can be late? And I didn't know what to do. And Charlie got right up there at my face. He goes, what the hell going on? I said, Charlie, I'm not feeling good. I hit a bump. I coughed. I crapped myself. I need to go home and change. Dude, Charlie's whole demeanor changed. Charlie just looked at me. He goes, I'm going to go ahead and punch your time clock in. Run the house. Change. Come back. Everything will be okay. I got you. I'm covered. I'm like, what the hell? And driving home, I realized that Charlie Kaminsky had crapped his pants a lot. Yeah, that's the only reason he was so cool. right after that little situation, me and Joey were going to Bolivar a lot in that truck, and I blew the first transmission in that truck, the first AOD transmission in that 93. No other problems. That engine run like a top. Everything is inside. I had me a 1,200 watt amp with two Sony 1,000 watt 12 inch exploders in a box. And boy, you were going to hear my music, son. All right. And we would go down on the weekends. We'd go down to Bolivar. We'd camp. We'd fish and party. And that's back. I don't know if you still can, but you could drive on the beach in Bolivar, you know, back in. Wasn't that many people out there? And didn't have any other problems that truck, and that transmission gave up the ghost, gave up third gear. And by the time we got back to the house that night, all I had left was first gear, I think. Yeah, so that transmission, it just blew for no reason. I mean, did it have anything to do with the hour and a half of donuts I was spending doing on Bolivar Beach? Maybe, but who's to say? It might could have just happened from the drive home. I don't know. I tell you, first thing out of my mouth when it did fail, piece of shit Ford. That's piece of shit. I was just doing donuts almost on two wheels in for 2 hours impressing girls, thinking I was impressing girls. I started getting a little big for my britches. I wanted to make more money, and the NDT business was kind of like this. There's a lot of turnover. there's a whole lot of, oh, I'll go across the street because they're going to give me a dollar more an hour. And of course, I was no exception. There was a company down the road called Metco, and Metco offered to make me a tech and give me my own gig, basically my own account to work on. And I was getting a little big for my britches, and I decided that's what I was going to do. I was going to go over there at Metco, and I did. And Metco was not like Testmasters. Testmasters was like a family shop. Metco was just a bunch of crackheads and drunks for the most part. They were a mess, them people. I did not enjoy working there at all. That's where I got hurt. I told y'all I jacked up my back. I was driving that pickup. I used to have to go out to this place called Trinity Steel. And it's kind of close to downtown Houston over off Washington. I don't even know if it's all still there anymore. I bet it's not. I wouldn't even know where to look for it now. But Trinity Steel was a steel company right on the railroad track. And they did all kinds of stuff. But they would rail cars in there full of steel for us to x-ray and check out and all that kind of stuff. And we had to do a lot of cobalt shooting out there. So I just ain't got my words today. When you do cobalt radiography, cobalt's for like shooting through really thick steel, really, you know, big stuff. The Navy does a lot of it. We used to use it in North Carolina to shoot through concrete, like in office buildings and stuff. But we had to do a lot of cobalt shooting out there at Trinity. And so cobalt camera, so a gamma radiation camera for doing gamma radiography, what you have this tiny little source. It's called a pill. And it looks like a little pill capsule. And it's got that active isotope in it. With most gamma radiography, it's iridium-192, I think. And then that has like a little piece with a connector on it. And the camera is like 85 pounds of lead with a S-tube through it. And that's where the source sits. And we've got the source in there, and the gate's closed on the camera. No radiation. There's some, but very little radiation is emitting from that camera. You hook a source tube up to it, and you position the source tube with an exposure, a piece of lead to guide your exposure, point it the way you want to, kind of like a shutter. And a focal point. And then on the other side, there's a set of cranks that go out about 50, 60 feet. And you use those cranks to crank that source out. You hook up the camera, set everything up, set your source up, calculate your shot, how long it's going to take. It's all a bunch of algebra, basically. Calculate your time and your distance. You set up your barricade. And then you crank out that thing and you expose your film and, you know, time it. And then you get your shot and so forth. So the cobalt camera, it's 500 pounds of lead because cobalt's bad stuff, man. And it's real strong radiation. So it's a 500-pound box, works the same way. Big S-tube in it, of course, a little bit bigger pill. Not much. It's about the same size. We had a trailer with a strap winch on it to winch in these two little ramps to winch that cobalt camera up on that trailer. But you could never do it just winching it. It always took two of us. Somebody had to push on it, and somebody had to, and I had progressed pretty fast in the company because those companies were easy to progress in if you didn't get a DWI. The DWI was like, that's how you lose your gig, right? You get a DWI, you can't drive company trucks no more. So you'd see guys at the top, you know, RSOs and shit would get DWIs. I got promoted more times just because I didn't get a DWI and somebody else did at these companies because that was just the easiest way to keep your nose clean, you know. And, you know, there's other ways to keep your nose clean too. But those kind of drugs weren't a problem for us because they don't stay in your system 2 or 3 days. And when you're good at your job back then, everybody warned you. They didn't want to lose a good hand. Hey, you got a piss test coming next week. You know, straighten your, you can't do that with the reefer. There's other stuff you could. Stuff that makes one work real fast. Climb towers. Mess with cobalt radiation. And I worked with this old level three. He had been a level three RSO. His name is Ed Coates. He's a brilliant man. But he's older man. And he lost his big cushy gig because of a DWI. And so he was out there doing Trinity. That was our account. And we were out there doing Trinity Industries together. And it was graveyard shift. So we'd have to go there out there at night and work out there all night. And of course there's crackheads everywhere up now. I can't tell you how many crackheads I have seen run over by trains, but it is a lot. I don't know why crackheads and trains go together, but crackheads love a train track. And I have unfortunately seen a great number of crackheads run over by trains. It's not pretty. I saw one crackhead get by a train, get up, and walk off. But, yeah, I don't know why those two things go together, but they do. But maybe poverty and train tracks go together. Who knows? Man, I live right by a train track. That's held things up. Yeah, they man, we ain't even heard no trains today. One of them broke. That's weird. It's about 2 or 3 p.m. on Friday, Saturday. Woo, it's 100 degrees outside. It is cooking out there, buddy. The man, what was I saying? I lost my place. Oh, we were out there shooting cobalt, me and Ed Coates. And of course, I'm not going to make the old man push the camera up the trailer. And Becco was just kind of a crap shop at the time. You'd tell the guys you need to get something fixed, but they didn't want to spend no money. And I told them that strap looked a little rough a couple times already and that it slipped on me twice. And they're like, oh, it's fine. You just need to pay attention when you're using it. And sure enough, man, we're out there one night, 2 or 3 in the morning, wrapping up. We're putting that cobalt camera on the trailer. And yeah, we're in a hurry. We're tired. We want to go home. And Ed's cranking away at it. And I'm standing in between them two ramps, pushing on it when that strap breaks. And it just bent me over backwards, you know, just like a pretzel, man. My legs went under the ramps and my back went away. It ain't supposed to go without breaking, I don't think. And, didn't hurt that bad that night. I mean, I was all bruised up from getting hit by the camera and run over by the camera. And I was mostly pissed at my balls for not doing something about that camera already. But didn't hurt bad that night. I was just a little roughed up. I'm going to be honest. I went out drinking. I, you know, went had me a couple drinks at the house and stayed up till 5 or 6 in the morning after that. But, man, boy, the next day when I woke up to get ready to go to work, something was different. I had this real tingly feeling in my lower back, and it felt like if somebody was standing behind you and just like if they just took a knife and just, you know, just are doing that in your back. They're not stabbing you, but that knife's right there. And that's what it felt like. And that feeling's been there about 24 years now, and ain't never gone away. I do stuff to lessen it, but I did workman's comp, and I signed a bunch of dumb stuff I shouldn't have signed, and that's what I told y'all, and, you know, I'll say it one more time. Don't let these companies get away. Don't let a job steal your health without making them make it right. I was foolish. I should have got a lawyer, but I listened to workman's comp people, and they put the screws to me on it. And now here I am, 47, with a back that just takes a crap on me every once in a while. And yes, I'm aware that losing weight will help my back and all that good stuff. I'm not a fool. But I can lose all the weight in the world. My back's still going to be ruined. Okay. Don't get it twisted. No, I could be skinny as a rail. That back's going to be jacked up. And it does give me less grief since I have lost weight. I will say that. But, you know, six, one, half a dozen others. Sometimes I heard it working out too. I've fallen in love with squats. I like the way it makes me feel, but ooh, they're a little rough on that lower back. Now, while I was working out there in Metco, is when I met a gal named Wendy. And I'm going to tell y'all a little bit about Wendy, but I didn't do right by Wendy. And to Wendy's credit, Wendy should have seen all my red flags too. She was a grown ass woman, and I was a whole problem. I mean, it wasn't like it seemed like I had my crap together, because it didn't. But the biggest problem with being Wendy is I was just kind of lonely. But I was going through a phase, man. I was very promiscuous at this time. I'm blowing and going. I'm having a good time. My Uncle Bobby has taught me how to talk to girls and taught me that if the reason a lot of guys don't get anywhere is because they don't know how to talk. And he had always told me, you just go, or you see one you like, go talk to her. Make her laugh. You know? And one night hanging out, I had this tactic, hang out at Sam's boat listening to music, but I'd hang out by the exit to the bathrooms, old Sam's boat on Richmond, and everybody walked through there, and every pretty girl walked through there, hey, how you doing? Because a lot of them just liked my accent, you know, I was learning that. Hey, how you doing? And they stopped and talked to me. anyway, that's how I met Wendy. I was actually hitting on her sister. Her and her sister walked by, and I was like, hey, how you doing? I was hitting her sister, but her sister didn't like cowboys. Didn't have no interest in rednecks or whatever, but Wendy took a shine to me, and we got chit-chatting and started hooking up, and I let things get serious between us. She, you know, she had big plans about getting married and all this kind of stuff, but I didn't have those kind of plans then anymore. I was over those kind of plans. I decided I wasn't 100% sure I wanted any of that mess no more. But there was sure going to be a stiff registration process to get there. I can guarantee you that. It was a little better. I might have to go over that with a Dremel tool. Some of that rust did not come off. But maybe I hit it some more. Looks better than it did, though. Me and Wendy hook up. We start running around together. And the biggest reason me and Wendy are wrong for each other is Wendy met me while I was wearing a mask. I had learned by that time that you needed different masks to get through life. And one of the masks I wore was fun, gregarious party guy mask, but that is not who I am. I'm not the guy who wants to hang out with everybody. I do not want a big social circle. I think I may be an introvert. I'm not 100% sure. I'm an introvert doing an extrovert's job, but I just did that to force myself out of my routine and, you know, meet people and hang out. But everybody loved gregarious, fun party guy. And I had learned that. That guy was welcome everywhere. Everybody really enjoyed him. As long as I didn't let him get too out of hand, everybody enjoyed that guy. Everybody liked fun Jerry. And, you know, real Jerry, only Joey got to see around that time period, you know. And Wendy started getting to see it. And problem was, Wendy was one of those people that liked to have a big, giant social circle. And I wouldn't. I had worn a lot of masks in my life by that point. When I was younger, I pretended to like hunting and stuff so I could hang out with my cousins and be cool with them. But I don't, to this day, I don't really care to hunt. It's not my thing. I don't have anything against it. I don't have, like, no problems with it or anything like that. It just ain't, what Ron White say, it's cold and it's early and you got to put deer piss on your shoes, walk around the woods. I just ain't into it, you know. I'd rather just, I like fishing. Fishing's my thing. But hunting, I just don't really care about. It's an expensive hobby anymore, too, and I ain't got a lot of extra money to go around between you, me, and the wall. But I wore that mask for my family because then, you know, they thought I was one of them or whatever. But I was always different. I knew I was different when I was younger. I was a dork, man. I'm a dork at heart. Like, my inner me doesn't ever want to go anywhere. I do enjoy travel. I do enjoy going places, but I also hate it. I also hate travel. It's a wild dichotomy to be in my brain because I am a homebody. I am a person that likes to be around my comfort, my things that make me feel good. I like to play video games. I liked reading comic books. I'm a dork. Always have been. Like reading books about. I'd much rather. Look, man, everybody's always, I get this all the time. Like, man, I'd love to have beer with you. Man, I'd love to have a drink with you. Every show. If you catch me after a show and I decide to have a drink with you, you're breathing rare air. Because it's not that I don't do it, but it's rare that I do it because it's just not my thing. I would rather sit on my porch and drink and go down Wikipedia and YouTube rabbit holes about old boats and even older tractors. I'm a dork. I'm sorry. I hope your perception isn't ruined too much after the whole Big Lebowski thing. And some of you just found out I drive a Mazda, which is wild to me because I talk about it all the time. And also I'm a dork. I'm a dork, man. And, Wendy had big, she liked having a big old giant social circle, and she always had some plans and always wanted to go do something. And me and my brother were still roommating, and Wendy was about to move out of her place. And I foolishly told Wendy she could move in, which I shouldn't have. I wasn't in love with her. We were having fun, sure, but I didn't honestly see a future with her. And about that time, Melissa had popped back around, and y'all know, I told you, she's in trouble. She's about to cause some big problems. But that girl had already caused me a lot of problems. She's a whole-ass problem. Her crazy ass mama raised her to be mean as a damn snake, and she was good at it. She was like that girl, Expectations. And the problem with Melissa is I did for her what I think the kids call simping now. I just followed her around, and whatever her whims were, I would jump on board with it. I was just, no matter how cruel she was to me, she was always still that little girl that I met in an apartment complex with my first friend in Houston. And I hadn't figured out how to separate the two yet. So she comes back around, which also spells problems for Wendy. My mom even warned Wendy. She said, you better keep him away from Melissa. Wendy's like, oh, no, Melissa's fine. My mom's like, no, she ain't. No, she ain't. My mama knew all about that girl. She tried to warn me. And anyways, about that time, I got headhunted, which used to happen in the industry a lot. People looking to open a new shop or whatever. They would go out and find a guy that was pretty good, and I was pretty good, and didn't have no DWIs, you know, and had a pretty clean record, not getting in trouble and such like that at work. And I interviewed with this company called Baker Testing that was opening a new shop in North Carolina in a town called Mooresville, North Carolina, Race Car City. That's where all the, at the time, is where all the NASCAR shops were. It was pretty cool. I got to go in all of them. They hired me, gave me a big old fat paycheck, and were going to have me come run the whole RT side of the shop. I was going to run all the X-ray. They hired me some helpers. I gave them radiation safety, taught them the class and shit, taught them what they needed to know, and I packed everything I needed in that Ford 93, and I headed off to North Carolina. Me and Wendy decided to stay together, but she was going to stay living in my apartment with Joey in my side of the apartment. It was like a little roommate special. I was still going to pay rent. I wasn't going to leave Joey hanging, and they were paying for my company housing in North Carolina. That was a big, that drive to North Carolina was something, man. And, Had my first run in with a Tennessee State Trooper on that drive. Got me a big old fat ticket in Tennessee that never paid and ended up getting my license suspended over many years later. But I got out in North Carolina. Of course, everything was different. First person I met in North Carolina was a lady named Robin. She's a nice lady, attractive lady. And she ran, she was like the office manager, ran the office, a lot of the scheduling and stuff. And this other guy, I can't remember his name, and I don't even care because he was a piece of shit. This other guy was from Pennsylvania. I think his name was Kurt. And Kurt was a lying, manipulating, power-hungry piece of crap. And Kurt would say and do whatever Kurt had to do to make sure Kurt was okay and screw everybody else. And I didn't like Kurt right off the bat. I just thought Kurt. But I liked Robin. Robin was cool. And Robin had a husband named Lucian Luke. And Luke was cool as hell because Luke was a redneck from New York, state of New York. He was from somewhere upstate New York. And I just liked him. Now, this company was based in Boston. They weren't based in North Carolina, but they were trying to get this office going. And that was a lot of my job was to go out and find new places where we could sell x-ray services. So I started, there were still a lot of textile places and stuff in North Carolina up around Hickory and all that stuff then. And it was still kind of one of the big industries. So I was going around these tech, you know, tell these people, hey, we can x-ray these drums. We can do all this stuff, let you know failure rates. We can do UT testing. I was trying my best to sell jobs and make connections and got a few. And honestly, I know I didn't pick up enough x-ray work to keep that shop open because I was blowing and going. I was having a good time and hanging out most nights with old Luke in his shop. We'd get off work and I'd go over hang out with Luke in his shop and we'd throw darts and drink whiskey and stuff out in his little man cave. And it was fun, you know, it was just a little workshop. He was a carpenter by trade. He was a cool guy. I love North Carolina. I had such a good time there. I remember when I first got there, they tried to tell me they were the barbecue capital of the world, which made me laugh. And I still laugh when people from that area of North Carolina try to tell me that. Western North Carolina got some pretty good barbecue, but that crap over there in Charlotte. Come on, man. What is that? That pulled pork, tuna fish, sandwich-looking crap. Ugh. How many vegetables you got to put in your barbecue to make it taste good? I don't know. It's not for me. Kudos to whoever does love it. Not for me. But the recipe was good up there. Boy, I had a good time. I had a company apartment. And right after I got there, right after I drove North Carolina, the transmission on that Ford went out again, and the guy I'd hired in Houston to build it, of course, was just he was a guy that worked over at Tommy Bond Ford, and I had hired him to rebuild the transmission, and now his transmission had taken a crap on me again in North Carolina, and of course, I couldn't get him to warranty it, you know, 800 miles away. So I found a little shop in North Carolina and right there in Mooresville, and they rebuilt it for me, and I didn't care. I was making all kind of money. I could afford it. And that guy was like, yeah, I put Cobra parts in it out of a Cobra transmission. And I was dumb enough to believe that then. And also was riding dirt bikes with Luke, and I was having a good time. North Carolina's a cool place. I was driving out to the beach. I did a bunch of fishing. I'd drive a couple hours. Everywhere you went up there, you could go. It was a cool place. I've often said that if I ever leave Texas, it'll be North Carolina or Tennessee or Colorado. Colorado is making a strong case with the recreational marijuana. I'll be honest with you, in the mountains, Colorado makes a strong case. And for somebody's like, oh, too many liberals. I like liberals. They don't bother me. I have lived around all kinds of different people for a long time. And them folks don't bother me. I like being around people. I like being around all kinds of different people. I really do. Maybe it's a symptom of the traveling life, but that's who I am. So that stuff don't bother me, especially if I get get the weed legalized. But yeah, North Carolina was good to me. I was having a good time there. But at come time, they were, we'd been up there 3 or 4 months, and they were actually talking. Wendy had come up there and visited. We went and looked at houses because I just decided to progress with this part of my life. They were offering me to move up there permanently kind of at the time. And I was thinking North Carolina might be a good change of pace for me. Maybe I need to get out of Houston for a while, get away from some of the stuff I was doing, and maybe just pitch all in with this gal and go to North Carolina and see where life leads me. You know, I like being around all the race car shops, and we'd go there and do testing for them. And but after about 6 months, the company didn't feel like the shop was making enough money, and they were trying to make a decision about what to do or what they thought the problem was. And old Kurt went and told the higher-ups at this company that I was sleeping with Robin, the lady that ran the office, behind her husband's back. This is what this piece of shit went and told these people. I absolutely was not. I was still faithful to Wendy at this time. I wasn't screwing around with anybody in North Carolina. But this piece of crap went and told the higher-ups at the company that that's what I had done. And I guess I didn't know there had already been another situation or somebody at the company and Robin had had some sort of thing or whatever. I don't know. There had already been some sort of inappropriateness that I wasn't aware of. And Kurt told them that, and they believed it. And they came down and they fired me, and they gave Kurt control of the whole office, and they let her go too. And they swore it didn't have nothing to do with that. But I know, I found out later that this is what he had done. And I hope he reaps whatever karma he's got coming for him, because that was a low-down, dirty piece of shit move. That's spoiled me on people from Pennsylvania for a minute. That was a dirty move, Kurt. Dirty, dirty move. What a sorry dude. Hey, right before I left, though, I decided to go back home, right, Houston. And when you're good at NDT, or at least back in those days, you can pick up the phone and have a job. You know what I mean? And a good one. You know, especially if people know you're good. I had already called and talked to somebody at Raytheon, and Raytheon had a job waiting for me when I got back to Houston. So I loaded up my truck. Also, I bought these two motorcycles. I bought these two used Yamaha Maxim, I think they were 650s, and I was going to take them back to Houston. I just bought them when I was in North Carolina with the plans of building a good one out of the both of them, and I was going to take them back to Houston, but I bought them for like $200 or $300 off Craigslist in North Carolina, or maybe it's some dude Luke knew, I don't remember, but I got them cheap, and me and my buddies loaded them up in the back of the truck. And, hell yeah, man. We loaded them up in the truck. I started heading home to Houston. I took the scenic way. I went down through Georgia and come across Alabama. And I remember I stopped at a gas station in Alabama. And I come out, some good old boy was out there looking at them motorbikes in the back of my truck. He goes, "How much you want for them?" I said, "No, I just bought them up North Carolina. I'm taking them to Houston. I ain't selling them." He said, "Hell, everything's for sale. What do you want? You take $1,000 for a pair of them?" Boy, I said, "Shit, I only pay." "Yes. Yes, I'll take." I sold them right there at that gas station. I helped that old boy unload them two Yamaha Maxims. I never rode either one of them. Sold them. Took my cash money. Followed him over to the bank. And he got me cash money out. And I went on my way to Houston a little lighter with an extra $1,000 in my pocket. And got back to Houston. It wasn't too long after that it was like summertime, I think. And I'm still paying the notes on this truck. God knows I probably paid for this truck 7 times over by this point. I'm still paying this ungodly tote the note lot note on it. And this guy's made more money off me than he's probably made off any other customer with that interest, you know? And I got the transmission done in North Carolina because I thought maybe I was moving there for good. So I'd have a good warranty with a little local shop. Now I'm heading back to Houston with transmission. Basically, I ain't got no warranty on it. But I got faith in it this time because he put them good Cobra parts in the AOD. Boy, I was a dummy for following that. Finding a good transmission builder is hard, man. I happen to know one of the best now, but just through fortune and circumstance. Man, I remember like around that time. I'm just going to tell you all this story because it's kind of weird. You got time, right? So we used to go out to the river, go float the river, you know, New Braunfels and stuff all the time. That was our thing in the summer. We'd go out there to the river, get loaded, buy a bunch of liquor, get on inner tubes and float the river. That was one of our big pastimes that time in my life. And me and Joey loved anything with fishing and drinking and also floating in cool water. Wendy's whole family would go. They had this special spot at the river that they ran in. Her brother had an RV, and they would all go out there every year. The rest of us would get in tents. So we go, and Joey goes with us, you know. He's my tag team partner. We're always hanging out together. And we'd go on this camping trip down at the river. And lo and behold, Wendy's ex-boyfriend shows up on this camping trip, right? I guess he's like a friend of the family or something. Some kind of, I can't remember the whole. I just remember they used to date. I don't care. Because the guy was kind of a weird worm anyways. But like second or third day, we're out the river drinking, having fun. We're playing in the water. This idiot starts thinking it's fun to pick up big rocks and splash them in the water at Wendy's sister, Casey. She's out there playing in the water, having a good time. And this dummy's dropping, and he takes this big flat rock and throws it at the water. And you know what flat rocks do? Even if they're big, they skip, and it skipped and hit her in the face and busted her head open to the white meat. Like, just jacked her face up. So they had to, you know what I mean, rush her to the damn emergency room. Of course, it's, oh, Gloria, I don't know what to do. We're just goofing off. And we all kind of think, hey, man, this dude will probably leave after this because the rest of the family's up at the hospital with Casey. And Wendy tells me and Joey, y'all go back, enjoy the campsite. You know, this is family business. And my little brother, her little brother was like 18. He was going to hang out there with us. Well, they were already letting him drink and stuff. So I don't take 100% responsibility for this, but I probably shouldn't have been in the care of an 18-year, looking after an 18-year-old. Joey sure shouldn't have. Neither one of us, probably. We let that kid get hammered. Oh, boy. I bet that was his first real big drunk. He was so... We were just having a good time. Floating up and down the river. People were throwing us jello shots. We were having, you know... Sucked the rest of them was up at the hospital. And we felt bad about what happened to Casey. But the wildest thing about that situation was the dude that threw the rock stayed out at the campsite. He didn't just pack up and leave out of shame like anybody else with some common decency would have, or go wait up at the hospital to see what kind of damage he had done to this girl. He stayed out at the campsite with his current girlfriend. This is one of the funniest things Joey ever. This is one of my favorite Joey stories. We're all getting ready to leave that campsite. They find out Casey's got to have a bunch of surgeries and stuff. We're going to go home. And we're all packing up our tents and stuff. And that dude that threw the rock and busted Casey's head open is packing up his tent. He comes running out of his tent. Holy crap! There's the biggest spider I've ever seen there. You guys are seeing the size of that spider. And nobody wants this dude around. We're ready for him to go. And we don't care. And Joey just looks at him and takes a drink and goes, why don't you throw a rock at it? And I nearly peed myself. And it's still one of the funniest things my brother's ever said. That dude's face... I mean, he packed that tent up and got out of there so quick after that. I'll give Wendy this credit. Wendy is the one that convinces me to finally try stand-up for the first time, February 10th, 2004. She bought me tickets to go see Ralphie May. Talked to Ralphie May. A lot of you have heard that story. He told me when open mic was. And so I decided I'm going to go do, I write me my 5 minutes of comedy. I'm going to do some open mic for the first time. I was infatuated with comedy. I wanted to be a comedian. But I'm also working graveyard shifts at Raytheon. And in fact, I was working graveyard shift Raytheon out at Exxon during turnover when I blow the transmission in the truck again one night on the way home from Pasadena, running about 100 miles an hour. And that time, I take it back over to Tommy Von Ford guy. I'm like, hey, your original transmission blew up and you couldn't warranty it because I was way the hell up there. Can you do something for me on this one? And he was like, well, you know, you don't let somebody else work on it, you know, all that kind of crap. But he did give me a break on the labor. I still had to buy the parts, but he gave me a break on the labor. He rebuilds the daggum transmission again for me. And I go do stand-up for the first time. I'm bit. I am bit by a bug. I've got a new drug that does me so much better than all the other drugs. I never had a feeling like that. I was hooked. Everything else took a back seat in my mind. Work, everything. All I cared about was getting back on that stage. And things being windy start coming apart. I'm working graveyard shifts all the time, and we're not seeing each other much because, you know, we're working different ends of the spectrum. Yeah, it's not good. We, like, I know it's not good, and Melissa's around a lot. And I'll say this, Wendy tried to tell me, when I got back to North Carolina, she said, hey, I think there's something going on with Joey and Melissa, and I think they're lying to you about it. And I didn't like her telling me that, because I didn't want to think these two people that were so close to me were lying to me about something, especially not him. Now, I could certainly believe it out of Melissa. Couldn't believe it out of Joey. So I just thought Wendy was crazy. I was like, no, he ain't into Melissa. That's not what he's into, and she's not into him. You know? And maybe because I had feelings for Melissa, I felt that way. Maybe whatever. You know? Don't matter. All I know is one night, Wendy was out of town, and Melissa came over, and it's the only time I've ever been unfaithful to somebody, and I regret it, and I hate it about myself, and I didn't have sex with her, but we kissed, and there was other, it was inappropriate, and me and Wendy were arguing all the time, because she wanted me to go out and do all this stuff, and I wanted to sit at home and play video. I just got Vice City. Remember how fun that game was? Oh, man, I wouldn't go to no party. I want to hang out and play Vice City with my brother and do endos and race motorbikes. I want to go fishing with my brother. I didn't want to go to parties and stuff. But she wanted me to go all this crap all the time. All the time. And I was tired of it. And we were fussing and arguing about it a lot. And she would cry and throw these big fits. And after that thing with Melissa, I felt so guilty about it. I decided to break up with Wendy. And I told myself then I was being, you know, straight up and all this kind of stuff, but I wasn't. I was being cruel and I was being mean. And I kicked that girl out of my apartment, and God, that was awkward. Her and her brother and everybody showed up to get her stuff, and it was bad. It was real bad. And, I was a dick. I was a dick, man. I hurt that girl for no reason and was cruel, and I regret it. That's all I can say. She is one of the people from my life that most people, especially people that screwed me around, whatever, I don't have too many feelings about, but I do have some regret at that situation. Not because I wanted it to work out for us, but I regret my actions and the way I treated another human being. It wasn't cool. But I was a young dick, and that's just all there is to it. But yeah, I broke up with her, and then me and Joey moved out of, I broke up with her right before we moved, because I was like, oh, this is a good time to do this. So that way we don't all move to the new house together. And like I said, I thought I was being cool. I was being a cruel dick. And me and Joey moved into this rent house over off Highway 6 in Karen Village. So we'd have a little garage, work on our stuff and projects, a little backyard. And, ooh. Yeah, I wasn't a great person at this time, man. And when the stand-up bug bit me, I leaned in hard. I leaned in real hard. I had never been in a world like this. These people were different than all the people I grew up with. And not too long after I started doing stand-up, Houston's Funniest Person contest is happening. And it's a big deal, and I sign up for it, not knowing any better. Not realizing the people usually win it are kind of established in the scene and pretty decent comics, but I was just going off luck. And luckily, I was pretty daggum funny. And I went through that contest. I won second place in that contest. And nobody could believe it because I was a nobody. It came out of nowhere. Just to tell you who did win the contest. First place went to Sarah Talamash. She was a Houston comic. Some of you may know her through Joe List. Her and Joe List are married now, but she has quite an impressive stand-up career all on her own and is a really funny, really incredible comic, and she's always been a really good friend to me. But she won first place. She was good. And the guy that won third place to my second was a guy named Harris Whittles. And Harris Whittles ended up becoming a writer on Parks and Rec and really doing a lot of things and doing a bunch of acting and stuff. Unfortunately, that young man OD'd and passed away. He guess he had some stuff he couldn't get away from either. It's funny how we all got them things. But Harris was a good dude. I had fun with him. But yeah, I got second place. I thought, oh, hell. I remember that night driving home. What was that song? Give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. Boy, I was feeling like I figured I was going to have me a HBO special for too much longer, you know? I didn't know how any of that crap worked. And me and my brother get impossibly lit that night. And the night I win that contest, the next day, I am supposed to leave and go to San Benitez, California, and start a turnaround project for Raytheon out at an Exxon plant somewhere out there. And it's going to be a 4-year job. I'm supposed to basically just move out to California and go on this other big adventure. But instead, I get drunk with my brother. I think we ended up with some rum in the humidifier, listening to Jimmy Buffett, A Pirate Looks at 40. And decided to start making decisions about my life at 3 a.m. And I called my boss and leave him a voicemail and let him know that I will not be on that plane going to San Benitez, California tomorrow because I just won second place in Houston's Funniest Person contest and my career's taken off and I'm off to the big leagues and just feel like going to California would be a waste of my good time right now. Next morning, about 9 o'clock in the morning, my boss calls me. I'm very hungover now. And he said, hey, Jared, I got a weird voicemail from you last night. And I'm just assuming that you're not on that airplane. I said, no, sir, I'm not. He said, so can I assume that everything else you told me in that voicemail is true, too? I said, yes, sir, my career is taking off. I've made a decision to step away from NDT. Go chase a dream. And I just feel like I'd be doing y'all a disservice. I went out to California, took your good money for a job I don't want. And big plans. I remember that old boss. He goes, well, good luck to you, son. I hope I see you on the HBO. And he didn't. He sure the hell didn't. Oh, dude. And I'm once I quit my job and I'm really leaning stand up, I of course run out of money very quick. Can't make them big truck notes anymore. I don't got extra money for anything. Joey's having to float us on the rent. I can't even pay my share of the rent. I'm doing little odd jobs and property management jobs. That Wendy, nice as she was, had helped me get. And I'm trying to pay the bills, but I'm failing at that. And I'm getting deeper and deeper into stand-up. All I want to do is hang out at the comedy club. All I want to do is be around it. I don't care. I'm not into girls. I'm not into cars. All I care. This was a transition. I'm going through a big transition, man. But this thing has taken control, and I will lose everything to go do it. And I think that's the game plan at the point. You know, I feel like maybe that's what you got to do. I read all these other stories about how these other comedians lost everything or they got anything. And old saying in the business is comics get what they deserve, usually about 2 or 3 years after they deserve it. So I think Tommy Drake told me that one time. But I'm in it. I'm bit. You can see that pickup. You can see that XLT up at the Laugh Stop Comedy Club every night. Until one night, coming home 2 or 3 in the morning, I do an epic burnout. Oh, no. No. Oh, I'm forgetting something. Me and Melissa are kind of messing around now. We're having a little bit of a relationship, but she's wanting me to be quiet about it, and I'm too stupid to figure out why. And it's because, at the same time, behind my back, her and Joey are having a relationship. And lying to me about it, and have been for some time. And it's just more of her manipulation and crap. And I find out I'm devastated and I'm mad as shit as my brother. And me and him get in the garage and go ape shit on each other. And we say awful freaking things to each other and throw punches and yell and push and shove. And I decide I'm done with this some 50. And I jump in my pickup and I do an epic burnout right there in front of the house down the street. Hell with all you. Done with Melissa, I'm done with him. I tell her no short order to get out of my life, and she's not welcome in my life anymore. And me and him just stopped talking to each other, but he's already floating the rent and everything, so I'm in the wrong on everything anyways. I'm still just furious with him. And we just stopped talking to each other. And about 2 days after that epic burnout, guess what goes out in that old Ford again? That damn transmission breaks the input shaft about 2 or 3 days later. And I was about to be behind on my first payment, and I knew I couldn't afford to keep paying for that truck anymore, what that guy was making me pay every month, even though I'd probably paid for the truck 10 times over now. So I called the guy. I told him about the transmission problem. And I said, man, you're welcome. Come get the truck. It's parked here at my, you have my address, parked here at my address, but I can't move it. So you're welcome. Come get the truck. And he said, well, that's probably for the best. And he comes out there at night, and they try to be all sneaky and repo about it. I told him, I was like, dude, I'll give you the keys. Come get the truck. You know, I can't afford to pay for it. But they wanted to come out there and be all sneaky and act like repo guys, and almost got shot by my neighbors. It was a whole funny thing. And I had to go out there and calm the situation down and talk to the guy. And, of course, Joey got mad at me about all that. And we were just mad at each other, man. We were so mad at each other. Matter we've probably ever been in our lives with each other, and with good reason. Man, right after that, that dude that owned that truck note lot and everything called me up and threatened to ruin my credit, and he was going to sue me for breach of contract. And I did something bad that night. I borrowed a friend's car, And I went to that tote the note lot in the middle of the night, and I found out a bunch of his tires had had holes in them. Purely happenstance. A lot of tires, though. About 20 tires. That's a lot of money. A lot of tires to fix or replace. Most of them had to be replaced because I found the holes were in the sidewalls, weirdly enough. Call and threaten me, you old piece of crap, when we had a deal, you know. I was honest with you. And I think he had an inkling of who found them holes in his tires because he called me next day and threatened he was going to whoop my butt and all this. He was going to do all this. He's going to come get me. He's going to get a lawyer. He's going to... I didn't have nothing. I was like, get you a lawyer, buddy. But how many tires do you want to buy? Because if you think I won't come back, boy, I cost you some money in tires, son. Get you a lawyer. And he never called me and threatened me again. And that truck never hit my credit. And I moved out. Joey decided to get rid of the lease on the house because I couldn't afford to pay the rent, which I get it. It was kind of expensive. And Joey decides to move back in with his parents again and kind of build his money back up again because I've cost him a bunch of money. I'm, you know, failing my end of the roommate agreement. I told you, it's not a guy. I'm doing some rough stuff here. It's not good. I'm a dick at this time. All I'm thinking about is me. And I'm mad at Joey, so I don't care that he's going through a hard time because of me, because I'm pissed at him about this other thing, this betrayal. And still no excuse for not holding up your end of the deal, for sure. And I believe very differently these days, but at the time, I didn't. And I get me the worst apartment that money can buy in Houston, Texas. It's right over off Richmond. There's a little street called Beverly Hills by Fountain View. And there was a little crappy apartment complex called the Beverly Hills Apartments, I think. And it is the hood. And my friend Shelly, who is kind of like my manager at the time, she was like a big supporter of my stand-up and stuff, and she wanted to manage me. But neither one of us knew what we were doing, but I do appreciate her trying. Sorry about that. Camera, we had had a single train day, but the camera's overheated 3 times, you know, so cut again. Oh, you remember where I was at? Oh, anyway, I told you, Shelly gives me his car to drive, a little Hyundai accent. When I look back at this truck, I think about how much I loved it. Not all the transmissions, though I do still avoid AODs like the plague. This was a transition for me. Nothing ever took the place of my car obsession like comedy did for a minute. Like, comedy really took over in my brain. And I was in the battlegrounds every night proving it and blowing and going. I was fine driving a Hyundai because for once I felt like I was doing what I was supposed to be doing, even though it ran against everything I'd ever been taught about life and how to do things. What in the shit? Does this thing go bad too? Oh, fuck, boy, I cannot win for losing today. Never mind, guys, we're just going to roll this one out. I guess it's just too hot for technology today. Like I said, I didn't care about driving a Honda. I was fine with it, you know. It was letting me do the thing I wanted to do. Parents weren't into it. Joey supported me on it, but, you know, for the most part, it's when all my big circle of friends start disappearing because, you know, your friends will come out to your first comedy show, but after about the second or third one, they're busy. And I wasn't going to any of their stuff because I was at the comedy club every night. And your new friends become the people you work with and you surround yourself with. And most of my friends were work friends all my life anyways. But I did love that. I love that XLT. When I see one now, I grin. I'm a big fan of the Marinos Ford trucks. I wouldn't mind having me another one one day, but it's going to have a 5-speed or a 4. It's going to have a manual transmission. There will be no more AODs in my life, I don't think. I'm sure trying to avoid that. As always, I want to thank you guys for sharing some of your Sunday with me. I love hanging out with y'all in the live chat. And this is the 10th episode, man. We made it number 10. I think we're going to do 20, and then this is going to become a live show. And I'm excited about it. I'm already sort of sussing out some equipment and looking into that. But yeah, man, look at us, all the way to number 10. We've learned some things. We've cried. We shared a few drinks, drank a bunch of coffee. I'll see you guys next Sunday if you're there. I'm not sure what we're going to do, but I think we're going to go talk about the Silver Bullet next Sunday. And the Silver Bullet was a little Toyota truck that my Uncle Bobby owned. And we had many great memories and a lot of good times in that Silver Bullet. I want to tell the story of Uncle Bobby because he's an interesting cat. He's somebody that certainly shaped a lot of who I am. Just as much as anybody did, probably. One more time, Breaking Yard Podcast today is brought to you by our friends at the Everyone Racers Podcast. Go check them out. It's really cool. It's a cool thing. It's a whole different thing than what I've seen a lot of people do. It's really interesting. I like their vibe. Go check it out. Like I said, I love hearing all those stories about those. It makes me want to go see. It makes me want to go watch an endurance race or go find these guys and hang out with them one day when you listen to their podcast. It makes you want to go hang out with them at a race and be a part of all the strife and the work to try to keep these cars going for this period of time and competitive. We do got some new sponsors that just come on. We're not announcing them yet, but my manager's out there putting in work, y'all. Y'all can help me. If you're watching this, please click the like button. Even if you don't like it, just lie. Click the like button. Those likes and shares, I don't ask you guys for anything. I don't ask y'all for money. That's not my thing. I know some creators do different stuff. I don't do that. But the more you like and share and comment on this stuff, the more YouTube keeps circulating it to other people that might like it. And same with you guys listening. The more you guys, I appreciate all the grind. I went in there and read all the ratings and the reviews on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and I was damn near moved to tears. It was really beautiful. I didn't even know all that existed. I had to go find it for myself. So all that helps. Thank you so much. Please keep doing that. Tell your friends about it if you think you know somebody that might be into it. And if you're new here, go back and watch the earlier episodes so you know what's going on. You know all the stuff I'm talking about. Here I have a good time. There's some cool cars there. Anyways, I'm JW. I love you. I hope things are in your way or moving out of your way. And if they ain't, I hope you find a big enough stick to move them out of your way with. JW's got your back. I think I got to do it. I think we covered the old XLT. I feel like we did some good tribute to her and all her training missions. Whew, that damn truck. I wonder how much money that truck. I probably spent 30 grand on that truck and still didn't end up owning it. Young and dumb, baby. Young and dumb. Oh, what a time. People say, boy, I'd like to go back then. Not me. Whew. Got no interest in that. I've done a bit of smuggling. I've run my share of grass. Well, I made enough money to buy Miami, but I pissed it away so fast. Never meant